We are joined on the line now by Fianna Fáil TD, former Minister for Defence, Willie O'Dea. Willie, good afternoon. Thanks very much for taking our call.
Good afternoon, Gavin.
Your overall reflections before we get into individual instances of how you believe the last 5 weeks have gone for Fianna Fáil.
Well, my overall reflections are that much good work has been done by the government in the past month. For example, the huge economic stimulus between direct grants and the guaranteed loan scheme, $7.5 billion, when you add that to the previous spending on the pandemic and temporary wage subsidy payments, amongst the largest economic stimuli in the EU. You've also had a very detailed and well thought out plan for school reopening, backed up by money, some very necessary legislation to improve the efficiency of the courts, etc., has also been put through. But I'm very angry that those things have been overshadowed, or largely overshadowed, by a number of rather silly errors and underpinned by pretty poor communication. And, so therefore the last month and what has happened and what has gone out in the public domain during the last month does not truly reflect much of the good that the government has done.
Can we take then, for instance, because you've spoken to the Business Post today and you've outlined a lot of your concerns around some of the unforced errors or the bungling errors of the last 5 weeks or so. You take issue particularly, first of all, with the €16,000 pay increase for the third super junior, something that was legislated for by the Oireachtas the week before last. You say it was the wrong decision, particularly when it was contrasted with the removal of the PUP. What was wrong with that? Is it not a fair case to make that if there are three super juniors at Cabinet and only two of them are entitled to an allowance, that it should be only right and proper that they all three should be allowed to receive it?
Well, you can equalise down as well as equalise upwards, and a solution was found then, and ultimately the three individuals in question with whom I have no personal issue, they then decided not to take the increase at all. But it has already gone out into the public domain that we had to vote through legislation or a section of legislation which gave a €16,000 increase to an office holder who already was entitled to income pay of about €125,000 a year. That is bound to play badly with the public at a time of hardship, at a time when people have lost their jobs, people are depending, hundreds of thousands of people are depending on the COVID, and when you're going back into an economy when these aids, such as the temporary wage subsidy scheme and the COVID scheme, are unwound, you're going to have a lot of unemployment and you're going to have a lot of business failures. And, in that particular environment, particularly in view of the fact that the ministers in the previous government forewent they didn't accept any of their pay increases.
Yeah.
So when you look at it in that total context, it was bound to generate a lot of adverse publicity. I mean, those things generally do. Sometimes some people will argue that they generate publicity way out of proportion to their importance. But it's inevitable that they would, and that should have been foreseen, and that should have been dealt with in advance.
So do you think then that as regards the super junior issue should have gone, that the government should just have abandoned that and encouraged those super juniors not to take any extra allowance at all, that their wage as a junior minister is more than enough?
Well, if that had been what occurred, then the government would have saved itself an enormous amount of grief, and the government would have ensured that more public attention was directed to the good things that it was doing.
But the reason I ask you specifically about that is because that did have to be approved by the Oireachtas, and TDs had to go into the convention centre and vote in favour of that section of the legislation, and you were among the TDs who went in and pressed the tall button. Why did you do it if you had such concerns about how it would look?
Well, because I'm bound by the party whip. I mean, first of all, we have to obey the party whip. The whip system is there for a reason. I didn't like it. There was other things I didn't particularly like doing, voting for in the past month, but that's how the whip system operates. I mean, even if I had voted the other way on the pay increases, for example, the government still had a clear majority, so I would have been expelled from the party. The government would have been down one, to have added to instability, and absolutely nothing would have changed.
So then, with that in mind, what do you make of the two Green Party TDs who decided that they couldn't support the government's own housing legislation in the last couple of days, and part of the logic that they gave was that should the bill didn't hang on it anyway, it was going to pass one way or another?
Well, look, the logic I've given you dictates otherwise. I mean, if the bill was going to pass one way or the other, what exactly were they trying to achieve? I mean, I think, it's a very undesirable situation. You have three parties making up the government. So you have 81, 82 deputies or whatever supporting the government.
84,
keeping
yeah.
The government there. 84, sorry. Keeping the government in place. Now, if members of one particular group get a very light punishment, as these two deputies are getting for disobeying the whip. And members of the other two groups are getting very heavy punishment. I mean, when I voted against the whip back in the Barrington's hospital issue, I was cast into the outer darkness and had a job to regain the whip. I mean, you know, that is unsustainable. I mean, that is clearly unfair and it's unsustainable. Take, for example, a situation whereby you have one or both of the government parties and the Green Party represented in a particular constituency, such as you have here in Limerick. If something of importance to the constituency comes up, say a closure of a school or a hospital or whatever, something that's going to affect the constituency.
If you have another Barrington's again in future.
I mean, if you have another Barrington's again, I mean, am I supposed to sort of vote that through, you know, in the teeth of total opposition from my constituents and are otherwise suffer the punishment of being thrown out of the party, when my Green colleague can vote against it and be the hero of the constituents, simply and the punishment is simply tap on the shoulder? You know, you're deprived of speaking time for 8 weeks or 2 weeks or whatever. The punishment for in government, particularly the punishment for disobeying the whip, must be equal across the board. Now, that's not to say that I'm an unthinking admirer of the whip system. I mean, an argument can be made that the whip system should be somewhat relaxed. It has served its purpose very well.
But maybe if it's going to be reformed, it has to be reformed for everyone at the same time.
Whether it's appropriate in a multi-party system and in a modern democracy to be operated exactly as it is at the moment, that's a debate for another day, and I can see arguments for and against. But as things stand at the moment, the whip system is there, and the punishment for breach of the whip should apply equally to every one of those 84 TDs supporting the government.
So then are you saying that those two TDs should have been stripped of the whip, or are you saying that at least they should learn from their mistakes now?
Well, look, what's done is done. I heard the statement by the Minister, Mr. O'Gorman, there. He said they give the parliamentary party an assurance. I mean, I'm not in a position to do anything other than take that assurance at its face value. But if a situation
It seems questionable, though, the idea that they can say that they're not going to have a fit of conscience any time in the next 5 years, or they're not going to have a personal disagreement with any bill.
You know, everybody has to judge that for themselves. All I can say to you is that if there's a situation where certain people amongst the 84 TDs can breach the whip system for very light punishment, so they have an incentive to do so, and others can't. I mean, that is not a sustainable situation into the future.
Why do you think that their punishment was so light? I mean, it's not as if the Green parties are total novices. I get that most of them have never been in government before, but you've been in government alongside them before. You know the party has some experience of the decisions that are needed.
Yeah. Well, I suppose the two people who transgressed are new TDs.
But they're not total novices, you know, they follow politics, they've been raised
in it. No, they're not total novices, I agree with you fully, they're not total novices. I mean, it is not for me to be prescribing particular punishments for transgressions within other parties, but I will say this, that there are three parties making up the government, and there has to be equality of treatment in relation to the whip from here on in. As I say, anything other than that would be unsustainable.
You've also been critical of the decision for Leo Varadkar to be allowed to retain an aide-de-camp. What is your concern about that?
Well, the tarnished. Well, you see, my concern generally is that the more advisors you appoint and the more sort of offices you attach onto government ministers, again, at a time of economic hardship, which the country is certainly going through and which is facing more of it, that, you know, adding on to government offices and creating offices that aren't strictly speaking necessary and the reason for which isn't properly communicated to the public, it does irk people. There's no question of doubt about that. It does irk people. And we've never had a situation in this country, to my knowledge anyway, where a tarnished had an aide-de-camp. I mean, why does a tarnished need an aide-de-camp? I mean, if we've survived as a democracy since 1922 without a tarnished having an aide-de-camp, why did we suddenly have to have one now?
I suppose the logic, and I don't know what their logic is, but I can imagine their argument would be that if this is to be a true government of equals and we are going to have the office of Taoiseach rotated in about 2.5 years, then we are supposed to see Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael as being of the same stature and being on the same pedestal as each other, and therefore if the leader of Fianna Fáil is going to have an aide-de-camp, they would believe that the leader of Fine Gael should have one too.
And does that mean then that the leader of Fianna Fáil should have an aide-de-camp when he becomes tarnished in 2.5 years' time?
I wouldn't presume so. I mean,
look, the point about it is that you have a Taoiseach and you have a tarnished. Whatever about equality, you have an equality of ministers, you have a Taoiseach and a tarnished. That position is rotating. A Taoiseach is entitled to an aide-de-camp. We've survived for nearly 100 years as a democracy without a tarnished having an aide-de-camp, and I think it's totally unnecessary.
What do you think then about Simon Coveney being allowed to hang on to his state car, something which is the Labour Party in particular have been very critical of, because with the combination of the car and the cost of the drivers, it'll cost about €200,000 a year.
Well, again, you see, it's the same argument. I mean, anything that adds to the cost, anything that adds to the cost on taxpayers at a time of economic hardship is bound to gel badly with the public. I mean, my understanding is that because of his frequent trips to Northern Ireland, he needs an extra element of security. Well, surely that could be arranged in relation to trips to Northern Ireland. You don't have to have that attachment for 24/7 when you're doing things that have absolutely nothing whatsoever to do with Northern Ireland.
The Garda Commissioner, though, was the person who's intervened in this and say that on security grounds that it's supported, it's justified.
Well, you know, the Garda Commissioner was contacted, as I say, directly, as I understand, directly by the outgoing Taoiseach, who more...
I think it was indirectly via the SecGen and Department of Justice, but it was instigated by Leo Varadkar, yeah.
Yeah, well, indirectly. Well, I mean, he was contacted indirectly by the outgoing Taoiseach. So, I mean, you know, if I were in the Garda Commissioner's place there, I would feel a certain obligation, I'd feel a certain pressure to accede to the request. But again, it plays out very badly with the public, particularly when it was highlighted in the way that it was. It plays out badly with the public. If there was a problem, you know, for a tarnisher crossing the border to engage in political dialogue in Northern Ireland, that could be arranged separately to his normal travel arrangements.
Do you believe then that Drew Harris was put in something of an impossible position, given that he knew Leo Varadkar was behind this request?
Well, I don't. I can't look into Drew Harris's mind. I can only imagine. I'm only giving my views as to what possibly could have happened here. I don't understand the logic of it. I don't understand why separate arrangements couldn't have been made, and I still don't understand. But nevertheless, the decision has now been taken, and I suppose we just get on with it.
I know it was the dumb thing at the time, and every member of the government, the 15 senior ministers, were all given Garda drivers and cars at the time, but you were the Minister for Defence for 5.5 years at the Cabinet table. You had a state car and driver at the time. Did you feel that on security grounds that was necessitated or justified?
Well, I felt yes. Funny enough, when I came into the office first, I didn't actually feel that. But towards the end of my term, I did, actually, because the government got very, very unpopular, and the situation changed quite dramatically. So I did feel more reassured by the fact that I did have that level of security when, you know, towards the end of my term as a minister.
But then I suppose the question arises that if you thought it was necessary when you were Minister for Defence, albeit only at the end of the term, if you thought it was necessary to have a state car and driver then why can't today's Minister for Defence, Simon Coveney, have one now as well?
Well, I didn't. Well, I mean, did the rest of the ministers have one?
No. Himself, the Taoiseach Tánaiste, and then the Attorney General.
Why, you know, I mean, is there anything special or particular about Simon Coveney? I mean, that system has changed. I didn't say that I felt one was absolutely necessary. I simply said I felt more reassured. So, you know, the fact of the matter is, you know, you have one minister, former Tánaiste, he's still back now as Minister for Foreign Affairs. He's singled out for special consideration, which again adds to the burden of the taxpayer at a time of economic hardship. And that is not popular out there amongst the people of this country. I know it from my interaction with my own constituents.
What do you think is the best way that Fianna Fáil can assert its own unique sort of an individual identity in government when it's still in coalition with two other parties and they have to claim equal ownership for all of the decisions? Is it in fact the likes of yourself, you know, making clear that there are reservations around some of the ways in which the government is behaving?
No, I think the best way to do it is to get on with pushing our particular policy agenda. I mean, three parties sat down to negotiate the programme for government, each of their own input. I mean, there are certain things there that Fianna Fáil pushed very hard for. And I think that Fianna Fáil should be seen to be delivering those things and not just following somebody else's agenda. And I think that, you know, when the heads of the three parties forming the government sit down now in the calm of August, hopefully the calm of August, to reflect on the mistakes that have been made and try to work out a way to avoid these things happening again, you know, or similar mistakes happening in the future. I think that will be in the forefront of the Taoiseach's mind.
So when you talk then about, you know, Fianna Fáil policy and Fianna Fáil philosophy, what is Fianna Fáil policy that's distinct from what the government is doing?
Well, if I were in Heather Humphrey's position, I wouldn't have signed off on that PUP change. because it was clearly discriminatory.
She says it was never a change. She says it was always policy that the PUP recipients could go abroad.
We know that, first of all, even aside the fact as to whether there's any proper legal basis for this, we'll leave that aside because we didn't get time in at all last week to discuss that. It is discriminatory. It's slightly less discriminatory now in relation to people on social welfare than it was before, as a result of the minister changing her mind after we had already voted the very discriminatory policy through, forced into the door to do it. So I think it's still discriminatory, and I wouldn't agree with it. Secondly, if I were Minister for Justice, I certainly wouldn't have included sections 13 and 14 of the civil law bill that was passed in a kind of a rush.
You'll have to tell our listeners what those sections pertain to.
At the last night of the Dáil. It's the section that provides that when financial institutions, including virtual funds, submit documents to a court in future when they're trying to evict somebody or whatever, that the court has to presume that every single item in those documents are absolutely correct and true. Now, you know, in addition to that, if you look through the section as a whole, if you look through section 14 in particular as a whole, some of it is very, very badly drafted. I mean, it reflects a rush job, and I think that, there's going to be difficulties with the courts in relation to the interpretation of that section. That should have been taken out and discussed properly about its merits and demerits. There was no particular rush in just pushing it through the Oireachtas on the last day of a very crowded session.
But I suppose then the charge, Willie, would be, and I know Sinn Féin were making similar arguments, that this was basically rectifying the law in favour of vulture funds and not in favour of someone who might be the victim of fairly litigious or unnecessary, you know, vexatious action on their part.
Yeah.
That you could have perhaps done something about it. There was the opportunity in committee stage. You didn't have to necessarily break a whip or vote against it, but you could have put forward some amendments and they didn't get anywhere.
Well, no, government TDs can't put forward amendments. That's the reality. I mean, government TDs can't amend their own government's legislation.
Maybe not in principle, but in practice
I did. Well, maybe that's something we can look at for the future, but I did all I could do, which was to stand up and out in the Dáil, which I did, and outline the reasons why that section should have been taken out of the bill and the debate and postponed to another day when it could get proper consideration.
There are loads of texts and tweets, too many that I can put to you individually, but the general thrust of them, Willie, is that you're talking of the government as if you weren't a member of a government party, and they're finding it very difficult to reconcile your criticism, just as it may be, of the government with the fact that you yourself are still a TD that votes in favour of whatever the government puts in front of you.
Well, look, you know, government TDs have to represent our constituents too. They're just as entitled to hold the government to account as opposition TDs. I'm a backbench TD representing the people of Limerick. I'm and the public at large. I'm surely entitled to point out where I think the government is getting it wrong, in the hope that it might persuade the government to change its mind. The whip system is there. If you had a situation whereby everything I felt unhappy about, I was to vote against the government, then everybody else would be in a position to do the same. And how long would any government last? You'd have total chaos and instability. No government would last more than a month in that situation. And that's the difficulty. I mean, it's very easy for people to say, well, you know, if government TDs are unhappy with any particular aspect of government policy, they should just shut their mouth and go in like eunuchs and vote accordingly. That's what we have to do. But I mean, at least we should be entitled to let our reservations be known, and that's precisely what I'm doing.
Do you think the government will last the full 5 years?
Well, if they get their act together, I think they will. Yeah, I think, you know, they've had the, I mean, paradoxically, I suppose, the past month has provided them with an opportunity to see where mistakes and errors can arise. Now, mistakes will be made in the future. I mean, everybody is human. I mean, it's impossible to have a situation where you can completely avoid unforced errors. But, you know, the government has the opportunity still. It's early in the life of the government. They have the opportunity to put a system in place whereby these things are minimised. And if they can do that, then I think they will last, yeah.
We'll wait and see. Willie O'Dea, thanks very much for your time this lunchtime. That's Fianna Fáil TD for Limerick City and former Minister for Defence, Willie O'Dea, joining us this lunchtime on The Record.